Okay, so today's plan is essentially just talking about Noether's theorem. I had this grand plan of starting talking about Lie groups today, but I tried already this morning and it doesn't work. So I didn't even write it here. We're just going to talk about the symmetries of an action, just to get an idea of what that means, and Noether's theorem, which is something about the symmetries of an action. Now, there's some things I want to go over in a Google Drive folder. And essentially, every lecture, I'm just going to show you what I put in there. I added an extra folder. This is stuff that I would really like to have time to show you, but I don't. So instead, I'm just going to write some notes and I'm going to post them in there. And if you're interested, you can just open them and read about it. And if you have any suggestions about things that you would really like to have covered, but we don't have the time to do, and you would like me to put it in there, feel free to suggest. You can send me an email, just write it in the chat, tell me here at the drop-in session later, whenever you want. So let's look at the folder. Okay, so the extra folder is here. There's already something in here. I was hoping that it would be related to things from today, but it's not. This is about Lie groups and the algebra, so we're going to see these things next lecture. So this becomes relevant then. And for today, I have some notes posted already. So there's some information about the activity we're going to be doing soon. There's no need to open this yet, but at least you have it available for later. There's an exercise that I would like you to do later. So it's here, so you can read it when I put you in breakout rooms. There are some notes about the matrix Lie groups and Lie algebras, which I'm not going to do. In fact, the file name says not today. So ignore this. I'll just move them later. And this is the main thing that we're going to do today, is the proof of Noether's theorem. So I'm going to actually go through this PDF instead of trying to rewrite everything, because I already wrote it once yesterday when I did these notes. I don't really want to do it again. And also, I think this way is going to be better, since many of you have commented that one of the problems with this format is that, unlike boards where I can write things and it stays there and you can see all the boards at the same time, when I write things, I'm going to scroll down and you don't have access to the previous things anymore. So this way you all have access to the whole thing at all times and you can follow along and go back as needed. I hope that works. And as usual, I'm going to ask for your feedback. If it didn't work, let me know. Okay, so this is all about this thing. The only thing that's not in here is the actual statement of Noether's theorem. I'm going to write it down separately. And now, actually, before we start about that, have you all seen Noether's theorem in some way before? Just use the yes and no buttons so that I can actually get a visual clue of how many of you have seen it before or not. Okay, so far it seems most people have seen it. Someone is not, which is perfectly fine. Just as some background information, no one ever showed Noether's theorem to me. Not in my undergrad, not in my master's degree, not in my PhD. I just had to learn it for myself at some point. So that's normal. It really depends. We're all from different places. Some people may do things differently. Okay, so I think this is all that I had to say. And as usual, if you have any questions at any time, feel free to ask, either raise your hand or write them in the chat. Okay, so the first thing we need to do is figure out what the symmetry of an action is. Okay, so first of all, let's review what an action is. Suppose we have a Lagrangian L that depends on Q, Q dot, and T. I'm going to work with the simple one-dimensional object just for simplicity. You don't have to do this. This thing scales very easily to any number of dimensions. But for simplicity, let's assume that we just have a particle in one-dimensional space, which is, of course, kind of boring. Now, the action that we construct from the Lagrangian, we usually call it S, is actually a functional. You feed it the path of a particle, and it's the integral from some interval A to B of the Lagrangian, evaluated a Q of t, Q dot t, t with respect to t. So hopefully this is something you've all seen at some point before. And now suppose you want to do something that's a symmetry of the Lagrangian. So remember, the symmetry means that we are transforming something and we're going to keep the action invariant. That's the idea of our general notion of symmetry. There's a transformation of something that keeps something else invariant. We know what the something else is. The action is what we want to be invariant. What do we have to change? The something essentially is going to be t and q. We can change what a notion of time is. We can change what a notion of space is. And to do this, we're going to use continuous symmetries. And not only continuous, they're going to be smooth. And this is the notion that we vaguely talked about last time. So this means that our transformations are going to be this. We're going to take time, we're going to send it to time t tilde, which is going to be defined as t epsilon of t. So this is some transformation of time that is a parameter. And similarly, q tilde at time t tilde is going to be some transformation q epsilon of q at the origin of time, which by the way is the same as q epsilon of q of t minus epsilon of t tilde. I'm assuming here that t naught is the identity, t minus epsilon is t epsilon inverse, and t epsilon plus epsilon prime is the composition of t epsilon and t epsilon prime. Remember, this was the notion of a one parameter subgroup. Now, this is not the most general way you can do symmetries, because you could extend this notion and decide that the transformation on space depends also on velocity. But this is general enough that covers most cases of interest. So the only thing that's a bit strange that we should focus on is this. This is the new time, and this is the old time. We are deciding that our transformations are such that whatever we transform on Q, we take the point at the previous time, then we transform it in some way, and that's going to be our new point at the new time. So in some sense, we are putting these two transformations together. They're not independent. Space and time don't completely independently transform. We transform space, but at the same time, we take into account that during the transformation, time changes as well. And again, this is not the most general way of doing things. This could depend on any previous time. It doesn't have to be exactly the original one. We're doing it this way because it covers most cases that I know of at least. Okay, so this is a transformation. And how does the action change? Now, to an extent, it's completely up to us to decide how an action changes. Because when we say that the action is kept invariant, it's invariant with respect to some way of deciding how it changes. And for all we care about, we could just say, you know what, it doesn't matter what we do, the action stays always the same. Then everything is a symmetry, and this doesn't help us at all. So instead, we want a notion of symmetry that makes some physical sense. And what we do is this. We're going to define S tilde of Q tilde, which is our changed action, to be the integral. This time we integrate from t epsilon of a to t epsilon of b we integrate with respect to t tilde, and we're going to get the Lagrangian evaluated at q tilde of t tilde, q tilde dot t tilde, and t tilde. So essentially, I replaced everything with their tilde equivalence. And just so that you know what notation means, when I put the dot on top of something, I mean the derivative with respect to whatever argument it has. So this means that this is d q tilde over dt tilde, because q tilde is a function of t tilde. So the dot does not mean derivative with respect to time, means derivative with respect to whatever variable this thing has. Okay, so this is a notion. Essentially what it means is, because we are changing things, we need to change q to q tilde. So that part makes sense. But because we are transforming time, our notion of time is new, but the action itself is not a function of time. The only way we can change time is inside the integral. So when we do all our measurements, we're doing them with respect to this new notion of time. And so there's going to change our interval in time, and the integral is going to be with respect to the new time. So it's simply saying that the new observer, if you want, that underwent this transformation has a different concept of time than we do. Their time is t tilde, and so they measure everything with respect to t tilde. So physically, this is what's happening. Okay, so now we're going to say that S is invariant if S tilde or q tilde equals S of q. So essentially, we do this thing, we transform time and space in a certain way, and it doesn't actually change the action. If it doesn't change the action, so if this happens, then we say that we have a symmetry. Okay, so this is the first notion that we really need to understand. Are there any questions about this notion of symmetry? As usual, if questions come up, just put them in the chat and I'll just answer them whenever. Okay, so just so you know, this is another thing. I'm going to actually post some notes about this in the extra folder. There's also a notion of quasi-symmetry. And as the name suggests, this is something that's almost a symmetry. So it doesn't exactly satisfy this property here, but it fails this property in a good enough way. And this also has ties into Noether's theorem, but we don't have time to do everything. So if you're interested in that, I'm going to post some notes about that separately. But there is going to be something there. And I'll point out something more about this when we actually do Noether's theorem. Okay, so I'm going to post this, share for a moment, so you can finish writing these things while I set up the next page. Okay, so now we're ready to actually state Noether's theorem. Okay, I'm going to go back to sharing so you can see what I'm writing now. Okay, so Noether's theorem. Before we write down the actual theorem, some historical information. This is a theorem from 1918. It's easy to forget because it's such a fundamental thing and it applies to classical physics that you just think this is something that's always been known. But when you put it in context, this is actually younger than special relativity and it's essentially the same age as quantum mechanics and general relativity. So this is not at all something new. It's essentially as old as what we call modern physics is. So despite being a cornerstone of physics, it's actually a new thing. Okay, so the idea of the theorem is this. Suppose we have a transformation T tilde, which is T epsilon T, and Q tilde of T tilde, which is Q epsilon of Q T. Suppose that this is a symmetry. Of this action. So we have from A to B, integral of L of Q of T, Q dot T, T, dt. Notice that I'm allowing the Lagrangian to depend on time because there's no reason not to. Yes, Lagrangians that don't depend on time have nice properties, but some of them don't, and they're still fine. We like them anyway. Okay, so suppose that this is true, which means that S tilde of Q tilde equals S of Q, but let's specify more about this. What does it mean that this equals this other thing? This thing must happen for all AB. So it's not just for one choice of AB, because you could just choose A equal B, then this thing is zero, and then it never changes. So you could choose for all AB and also for all Qs. Now, for all Qs is very important. It means not just the solutions to the Euler Lagrange equations. This is a very important point. We said that this is a symmetry if it actually always works. It doesn't have to just work on a solution of our physical problem. It has to work for any possible path. Otherwise, the theorem doesn't really tell you much. In fact, it doesn't tell you anything. Okay, so suppose this thing is true. Then, if we denote by delta t this quantity, is d over d epsilon at epsilon equals zero of the epsilon, and delta Q is d over the epsilon at epsilon equals zero of Q epsilon. And by the way, these two notions make sense because we say that these are smooth one parameter subgroups. We talked about this on Wednesday, and I've been vaguer because what this actually means, we're going to see when we talk about Lie groups, but we're assuming that there's some way of taking derivatives in such a way that this makes sense. And we've seen an example of this. If we have something like a rotation, you could take a derivative and it makes sense. So this is the same idea. And as soon as I've stated the theorem, I'm going to show you some examples, and I hope that makes more sense. So if we denote the delta T and delta Q, these quantities, the quantity Lagrangian at Q of T, Q dot T, T times delta T, we'll take this whole thing, plus the L over the Q tilde, the DQ dot. Then we're going to multiply delta Q minus Q dot delta T. Well, this quantity is conserved. Conserved if the L over the Q equals D over dt, the L over the Q dot. So essentially, this is saying on physical trajectories. Okay, so this is the theorem. That's essentially what the theorem tells you. And the gist of it is, if we have a continuous smooth symmetry of an action, then there is a conserved quantity. And conserved quantity just means it's constant in time. So let me actually add this. Conserved means constant in time. That's the main idea behind the theorem. And the nice thing about this theorem is that unlike many math theorems where they just tell you, well, if there is a symmetry, there exists a conserved quantity, have fun with it, it actually tells you what it is. So it's what we call a constructive theorem. You can actually use to find out what this conserved quantity is, and it's exactly this thing here. And of course, this is a generic expression. Once you know exactly what the transformations are, you're going to know what delta T is, and you're going to know what delta Q is, and you can write down exactly what this is. So this is the theorem, and we're not going to prove it right away. We're going to do two things first. First, I'm going to give you examples, so you're going to see how the theorem works. And then we're going to do an activity, and then we're going to prove the actual theorem. Okay, everything okay so far? Is at least the statement of the theorem clear? Okay. So let's see an example. And this serves as an example of two things, the actual theorem and what exactly are these transformations that I'm doing, because these generic notations are great for compactly writing things, but they don't really mean anything if you don't give them context. Okay, so example, suppose that the Lagrangian depends only on position and velocity. So it is time independent. And now suppose that my transformation is this. T epsilon of T, which is T tilde, is just going to be T plus epsilon. So this is what we call a time translation. And Q tilde of T tilde, it's not going to change, it's just going to be Q of T, or in other words, Q epsilon is the identity. So this is one of the simplest transformations you can do. Of course, the simplest one is T tilde equals T, Q to Q tilde equals Q. Nothing changes, and of course it's going to be a symmetry, but it doesn't really do much. Okay, so first things to check, indeed, these two things are one parameter subgroups. And actually, someone this morning asked me a very important question. When I say one parameter subgroups, what is the group that these are subgroups of? Because I keep calling them subgroups, but I didn't tell you what the group is. Well, these are transformations. They take time to time. So if you want to take the real numbers to real numbers. And we want it to be invertible. So they're just invertible maps from R to R. And they form a group because the identities in there, they are invertible. So you can actually compose them and they're still are transformations. They end up forming a group. And so this one parameter subgroup is the one parameter subgroup of that particular group. Same idea for the Qs, is transformation of space into space. Okay, so they are one parameter subgroups. So this is an example of things that are actually one parameter subgroups. Okay, so what is S tilde of Q tilde? Well, this is going to be the integral from A to B. From A plus epsilon to B plus epsilon, because we're replacing everything with the tilde equivalent. Then we have the Lagrangian of Q tilde of T tilde, Q tilde dot of T tilde, and that's it, because you don't have any dependence on time, T tilde. And at this point, we're going to use essentially integration by substitution. Or if you want, we use the fact, we replace d tilde over dt. We replace d tilde with this. So in some sense, this is equal to dt tilde. I mean, this is a physicist inequality. It's equality. It's kind of true, but only if you actually give meaning to this equation. But this actually makes sense. If you're doing the change of variables theorem, integration by substitutions, we can actually do this. So we have to substitute these back into the T equivalent. So they become A and B. And then we remember that this thing is actually Q of T. And you can show easily that this is actually Q dot of T by actually seeing how it's defined. So this ends up being L of, and actually, let me tell you why this is true. This is because d over d tilde, dt tilde is the same as d over dt. Because we are just redefining t by adding a constant, this doesn't actually affect when we take derivatives. So this becomes L of q of t, q dot t dt, which is the original action. And this doesn't depend on A and B, so this means that we have a symmetry. So we found the winner. And at this point, we can use Noether's theorem. Noether's theorem tells us if we have some one parameter subgroup of transformations of time and space that leave the Lagrange, the action invariant, then there's a conserved quantity. And the conserved quantity, we know exactly what it is. So the conserved quantity is going to be the Lagrangian evaluated at Q, Q dot, which multiplies delta T. Now, what's delta T? Actually, that's, should have done it before. I'm going to put it here. Delta T is the derivative with respect to epsilon at epsilon equals zero of T epsilon of T. But this is just going to be one because you're deriving T plus epsilon. T doesn't depend on epsilon. Epsilon is just itself. We get one. Delta Q is going to be zero because we're taking the derivative of the identity that does not depend on epsilon at all. So the conserved quantity is L Q Q dot times delta T. I'm just going to rewrite the whole thing and then we substitute. And I'm going to have plus the L over dQ dot delta Q minus Q dot delta T. Okay, so this is one, this is one, this is zero. So we end up with L Q Q dot plus the L over dQ dot, which multiplies, and here we're going to have a minus that comes from here, so I'm actually going to write minus Q dot. Now, does anyone know what this thing is called?
The Hamiltonian.
Okay, so you're saying the Hamiltonian, which is almost true. So technically, this is not an Hamiltonian for the only reason that it depends on Q and Q dot. The Hamiltonian is a function of Q and P. So it's almost the Hamiltonian, but it's in the Lagrangian formalism. So we call it the energy. Now, this is a very subtle point, but if you want to go to the whole differential geometric aspect of things, so just want to tell you this thing just because it's interesting. And if you have an idea what I'm talking about, as usual, just ignore me. This is not part of the course. The Lagrangian formalism works on configuration space that has position and velocity. In differential geometric terms, this is the tangent bundle to a manifold. The Hamiltonian works on the cotangent bundle or some subset thereof, which means before you can make it into an Hamiltonian, you need to somehow go from one of these spaces to the other. And that's called the Lagrangian transform. So because we hadn't done anything of the sort, we kept Q and Q dot. This is an energy and we are in the Lagrangian regime. End of excursus. Okay, so this is the idea of what the theorem is. In practice, what you need to know is this. You need to know what the symmetry we are trying to do is. So you need to know what T tilde and Q tilde or T tilde are. You need to know the Lagrangian or at least something about it. And you need a way of proving this thing. this is the tricky part because it's not always as easy as this. So before I give you the exercise later on, I'm going to explain exactly how do you find out if this thing is invariant. Okay, but before we go on, and I'm going to leave this up again for a bit while I switch slides so you can finish writing down things. We're going to have an activity. So I'm going to divide you into rooms, and for this activity, it's going to be similar to the one from last time where we were discussing things in groups. Okay, so I'm going to resume the share so you can see the plan of the activity. So it took me 3 lectures, but I realized I can actually write down things in advance and then I can show you what my plan is. So I don't have to just tell you things, you can see them. And this file is in the Google Drive folder. So if you want to see what this says while you are in the breakout rooms, just don't worry from there. So I'm going to divide you into breakout rooms. What you're going to do in there is this. You're going to discuss with your peers this topic. What are the reasons why Noether's theorem is so cool? And there isn't a single answer. There isn't a correct answer. Just come up with any idea that you and your peers think about these things. There's lots of reasons that I can think. I'm sure that you can think of reasons that I didn't think about. So I'm very interested in seeing what the reasons you can come up with are. So after we're done with this, and actually while we're doing it, if you want, in fact, it would be better for time purposes. If you go to the Socrative website with the symmetries folder, I'm going to start the activity in a moment, and you're going to be able to submit the answers that you come up with in group in the room. Now, the only thing to note is for the next part of the activity, it's very important. You can do more than one answer. So if you have multiple reasons, just do multiple answers. And please do just one reason per answer. Don't write an answer with 3 different reasons because it's going to break my plans for after. And also make sure that you don't post multiple times for the same room, the same answer, because it doesn't really make sense. So just have one person post the answer or just one person post different things. Okay, while I set up rooms, is everything clear about the activity? I'm going to pause the recording. Actually, Ivan, can you pause the recording? Because I don't know how to do it from. So let me get things ready. Okay, so this is the proof. This is the same file that's in the Google Drive folder. I'm going to annotate things on top of it if there's any additional points I want to make, if there are questions. So then I'm going to post the annotated version, but at least you can follow along. And I thought this time, instead of trying to write everything, it's just going to take a lot of time. And I don't think it's going to be that useful. I'm just going to go over this with you. I mean, I wrote this, I didn't copy it from anywhere. I came up with this thing yesterday. And as I told you earlier, no one ever showed Noether's theorem to me. So this is the proof that I came up with for this thing. It's a bit different than the proofs I usually see. And the reason why I wanted to show you the proof, there's really 2 reasons. One reason is I was taught a while ago when I was an undergrad that doing a theorem without proving it is almost the same as not doing it. And believe it or not, it was a physicist who told me this, not a mathematician. Because you often see things inside the proof of the theorem that make you understand what's really going on. And this is one of those cases. If you don't see the proof, you're not going to know how to actually use it. Remember when I told you it's not always obvious to see whether something is a symmetry? If I don't show you how the theorem is proved and I tell you just prove that this is a symmetry, you're not going to have no idea how to do that. The second reason is that most of the proofs that I've seen of this theorem, they are not really proofs. Sometimes they just work for the wrong reasons. And there are some problems with those. So this is my attempt to find something that's rigorous enough, but not at the level of the crazy stuff mathematicians will try to pass you as a proof, because then it will be way too complicated. But it's still a bit higher than average physicist proof. So that's where I try to aim at. So I hope you enjoyed it. Okay. So most of the things at the beginning are just a recap of things we've seen before. We have a transformation, T tilde is T epsilon T, Q tilde is Q epsilon or QT and so on. These are smooth one parameter subgroups and everything we've just seen before. So I'm not going to spend too much time on it. One thing I want you to notice is when we have S tilde or Q tilde, we can either write it this way or we can change variables, go back to T. If we change variables, we're going to find this. it's essential in this case, since it's one dimensional with just the time as an integration parameter, we can just use integration by substitution. And so dt tilde becomes dt times the Jacobian factor, which is this. So it's going to be the derivative of t tilde with respect to t, but t tilde is t epsilon. And then we multiply by the Lagrangian evaluated at these things. There's q tilde, but it's evaluated at t epsilon of t, and q tilde dot at t epsilon t, and so on. We don't need to do this, it's just for convenience. It's going to make things a little bit easier later. Now, suppose that this happens. So we have a symmetry. This is for all paths, for all choices of AB. So the start definition of symmetry from before must happen even if the paths are not solutions of the Euler Lagrange equations. That's very important. Okay, then first of all, we're going to define a delta S, the variation in the action, if you want, to be this. We take the derivative with respect to epsilon, evaluate at epsilon equals zero of this particular thing. Now, because I said that this quantity equals S of Q, and S of Q does not depend on epsilon at all, then the derivative with respect to epsilon must be zero. And as it turns out, you could have chosen this as your assumption. It's a weaker assumption, but it works just the same. So you don't necessarily need to check that indeed S tilde Q tilde is the same as SQ. As long as this particular quantity is zero, then everything is going to work just the same. Okay, more notation. I've actually given you this notation already. Delta T is going to be the derivative of T epsilon with respect to epsilon at epsilon equals zero. Delta Q is going to be same thing, but with Q epsilon. And this is just something that we're going to see later, but these are called the generators of T epsilon and Q epsilon, respectively. And in what sense we're going to understand when we see the algebras later. So it turns out that if you think in terms of Lie groups, these things live in a Lie algebra and they generate a Lie group, but this is just foreshadowing for later. Okay, so now I'm going to define a new operator that's the derivative with respect to epsilon at epsilon equals zero, and I'm going to call it capital D because I'm lazy and I don't want to write this over and over. And of course, I'm not writing this. I wrote it yesterday, but I was lazy yesterday. So I didn't want to write it over and over. And let's start by doing this operation on essentially every piece of information that we have. So we're going to try to take D acting on this piece because it was at some point in the expressions earlier. Now we're going to assume that things are smooth so that we can interchange the order of derivation. We can interchange d over dt and d over d epsilon. And remember from last time, I told you smooth means as nice as we need it to be. So smooth in this case means that our transformations are as differentiable as needed for this to make sense. So it's rigorous because I just defined it to be rigorous. Okay, so this ends up being d over dt of delta t, because by definition, we already knew that d of t epsilon is delta t. And similarly, d of q tilde of t tilde equals d of q epsilon of q of t. But now q of t does not depend on epsilon, only q epsilon does, and so we're going to end up with delta q evaluated at q of t. Now, the tricky one, and this is probably the most tricky part of the proof, is figuring out what happens to q tilde dot. So first of all, the derivative of q tilde with respect to t tilde, we can write it as derivative with respect to t tilde of q epsilon of q of t. And by the way, because I'm doing this in format, I have things written down already, I don't have to write them, I realize I'm going to go fast over this. If you think I'm going too fast, please let me know. Okay, so at this point, we're going to use the chain rule. I'm going to be warning you in advance, we're going to use a lot of chain rules and product rules in this proof. That's essentially all we're going to use, and sometimes we use them backwards. We're going to use them in reverse. Okay, so first of all, we take the derivative of this with respect to its argument, which is q. So we get derivative of q epsilon with respect to q. We plug in q of t. Then we have derivative of q with respect to its argument, which is q dot. And then we have the derivative of t with respect to t tilde. So this is a double chain rule. And at this point, just to make things simpler, I'm going to use the derivative of inverse function theorem. Which, despite the fact that it looks like a very physicist thing to do, to say that dt over dt tilde is 1 over dt tilde over dt, this is actually a mathematical theorem that tells you that if you have a function which is inverse of another one, the derivatives are related by being reciprocal. So it turns out that because everything is nice and invertible and differentiable, this makes actual sense. This equals this, and this by definition is 1 over d of t epsilon over dt. Okay, we almost have all the things we need. So suppose now I want to act with d on q tilde dot. Then I'm going to have, again, I'm interchanging order of derivatives, d over the q, and then I have d of q epsilon evaluated at qt, q dot t, 1 over, because I'm evaluating at epsilon equals 0, then this becomes d of t0 over dt. But remember, t0 is the identity. The derivative of the identity function is just 1. Because we're associating t to t. And now similarly, for the other part of the product rule, because I'm taking the derivative of three pieces, I'm going to have the first thing evaluated at epsilon equals 0, which again is going to be derivative of the identity, it's going to be 1. This does not depend on epsilon, so it doesn't matter, just treat it as a constant. And finally, we have to do this, d of 1 over dt epsilon over dt. And this turns out to be just minus d over dt times delta t. And the reason why is that we're just using the chain rule. I leave this to prove to you if you don't trust me. But essentially, it's the fact that we have 1 over something. You take the derivative, it becomes minus 1 over the something squared times the derivative on top. And then the something squared goes to 1 and delta t remains on top. Okay, so if we put everything together, simplify things that we know already, we know that this is delta q. We saw it earlier. And we know that this is this particular thing here. And one last step, we're going to take this by doing a reverse chain rule into this. If you take the derivative with respect to time of delta q, then you're going to have delta q derived with respect to q, which is its argument, times derivative of q. And so this is the same on both sides. And these are really the only tricky parts. So once we made it to this point, we're essentially there. So let's stop here for a moment. Is everything clear? And also, am I going way too fast? So I'm going to assume that no answer means that everything is clear and I'm going at a normal speed. So if anything other than that is happening, say something, write something, have some sort of reaction.
Somebody wrote something in the chat.
Okay. Okay. So I'll try to slow down a bit. But is it okay like this? Like at this point, is it clear? Do I need to make anything so far clear? Okay. So let's see what happens next. At this point, this is just really doing things, substituting things, canceling out stuff. This is not the complicated part. The one before was the complicated part. Okay, at this point, we're going to assume that Q satisfies the Euler Lagrange equations. Remember, the theorem tells you that the quantity is conserved when the Euler Lagrange equations are satisfied. So only on physical trajectories. Okay, so we know this by assumption. This is saying that delta S equals zero. We already know by assumption, because it's a symmetry, this must be true. But because everything is nice and smooth, we can take our D and we can bring it inside the integral, because the integral doesn't depend on epsilon anymore. That's the reason why I changed it back to T. Otherwise, I would have had to use the Leibniz integral formula to deal with this, and I didn't want to. Okay, so how do we do this? Well, product rule again. We have D acting on a product of two things is going to give us D acting on the first thing that we calculated already. This is D of dt epsilon over dt times the Lagrangian itself. And notice that it doesn't have d tildes anymore because we set epsilon equals zero. And then we're going to have plus the first term at epsilon equals zero, which is, as we've seen before, one, times d acting on the second term. So now if you find out what d does on the second term, we're done, because we can just plug back everything and we're going to see that it tells us something important. Okay. Everything okay at this point? Okay, so what happens next is very important. The next two lines are extremely important, because remember how I told you, if you don't see this proof, you don't know how to prove that something is a symmetry. This is exactly what you need to do to prove something is a symmetry. So when we do this, we're going to have to use the chain rule again. I warned you, it's chain rule all over again. Okay, so how do we do this? We have L does not depend on epsilon directly, but it depends on Q tilde, that depends on T tilde, and Q tilde dot, and so on. So we're going to have the derivative of L with respect to the third argument, and everything is evaluated at epsilon equals zero, so it just reverts back to the usual Lagrangian, times D acting on T tilde. And then the L over the Q times D acting on Q tilde of T tilde. And then DL over DQ dot, and then D acting on Q tilde dot, T tilde dot. Q tilde. So far, just chain rule again. Lots of chain rules. But we have already found out what these things are. That's why earlier I did all the possible ways of applying D on stuff, because we know that this equals delta T. This equals delta Q, and this equals this thing in parentheses. It's the complicated one we found before. Okay, so this is exactly where you need to stop if you want to show that something is indeed a symmetry. Because if, say, you want to show this particular statement, you don't know it already, you want to show it. Well, you know that delta S is the integral of this piece plus this piece, but this piece is exactly these things. So if you know what delta T is and delta Q is, remember how we had it in the example from earlier, you can calculate what it is if you know what the transformations are. Then you just plug in everything, substitute, and if it gives you zero when you do the integral, then it's a symmetry. If it doesn't, then it's not a symmetry. So that's how you do this. And that's how this proof actually tells you how things are done. If I didn't show you this proof, you would have no idea how to get to this step. And once you've done it, you already know, I need to check this. So you don't have to redo all the calculations from before. Is this point clear? Okay, so at this point, we're just using tricks to cancel out stuff. And that's where we start using the fact that the Euler Lagrange equations are satisfied. Specifically, what we're going to do is this. We're going to use the property that if we have something on the form A times the derivative of B, whatever A and B are, this is the derivative of A times B minus B, derivative of A. So I told you already, we're going to use some stuff in reverse. This is the product rule in reverse. And I'm going to use it here and here. So the idea is we want to make derivatives of the L over the Q dot appear. And because we know what they are, because we have the Euler-Lagrange equation. So we're going to take this and write it as the derivative of the product. So derivative of the L over the Q dot times delta Q minus delta Q, the derivative of the other term. So this becomes this plus this. And similarly, we're going to do something with this term. We have delta L over delta Q dot times the derivative of something. And so this is the derivative of the three pieces plus delta T, the derivative of the remaining pieces. So in both cases, we're using the same rule. Everything's still okay? Okay, so at this point, that's where the interesting stuff happens. This thing and this thing cancel each other out because we have the Euler-Lagrange equation. We know that the L over the Q is the same as dt, d over dt, dl over the Q dot, and this cancels out because you're just multiplying by delta Q. Okay, I see there's a question. So if you need to show that any physical quantity is symmetrical, we need to show that the blue star equation with respect to that quantity is equal to zero. You need to show that the star equation here is equal to minus this term. So if you want, you need to take this and put it in here. Now, I know this is not very clear because I have pieces all around. What you need to do is actually in the exercise page that I posted on the Google Drive. So we're going to see that at the end, it tells you exactly what you need to look for. So I have it all in one place because I do realize that in this proof, it's kind of not obvious, but then you're going to be able to actually find a nice description later. Okay, so we're almost done. The next steps are a lot easier. So what I'm doing now is just put everything that's a derivative together, because derivatives are linear. You can just put stuff inside. So essentially I'm going to take this term and put them in the same bracket. And in fact, we can also factor out a dl over the q dot. So we get d over dt of this whole term, which should already look familiar because it was exactly one of the pieces of the conserved quantity. And then we're left with this term. And then I expanded here these derivatives, the derivative of product. So product rule again. So this ends up being these two things. And this is the last substitution that we have to make. We're going to use the Euler-Lagrange equations again. D over dt of dl over the q dot, that's the same as dl over the q, because we are on a physical trajectory. And now all of these terms here have a delta t in front of them. So we can factor that out and we end up with this. But what this is exactly the derivative with respect to time, sometimes called the total derivative of the Lagrangian. Because we have, if we take this function, which is a function that depends on time on its own and also through other variables, if you take the total derivative, so any possible way it can change with respect to time, there is the explicit way plus the way it depends on Q and the derivative of Q with respect to time, which is Q dot, derivative with respect to Q dot times Q dot dot. So we can take this whole thing and make it into this. And at this point, it's just putting everything together. So now we have the derivative with respect to epsilon at epsilon equals zero of the Lagrangian is the sum of these two pieces. We put them back in the original equation and we find out that zero, which is delta S again, equals the Lagrangian times the derivative of delta t plus delta t times the derivative of the Lagrangian, which is a product rule again. Last product rule of the day. And then we have this. So eventually, these are all derivatives with respect to time. Just put all of them together, and we end up with this. The integral with respect to t from a to b over derivative. And now this is zero for all choices of a, b. There was an assumption. If this thing is zero for every choice of a, b, the only way this can happen, assuming everything is nice and continuous and smooth, is if the thing we're integrating over is zero. Which means that this is zero, and I forgot to write a zero. And derivative being zero means that something is conserved. That's how we define things to be conserved. It's constant in time, so it does not depend explicitly on time. So eventually, this is your conserved quantity. Okay, so now there's something important to say about this. The reason why we say that you need to show the assumptions without using the Euler Lagrange equations is that if you try to do showing this step using the Euler Lagrange equations, you are essentially going to redo the proof of this thing, and you're going to show that zero equals zero, which doesn't tell you anything, of course. So of course, zero is going to be a conserved quantity, but we knew that already. The theorem doesn't tell you anything interesting. So it's very important that this only works if the symmetry is independent of the Euler Lagrange equations. Okay, so this concludes the proof. It's not the most rigorous proof, but it's also not the least rigorous proof. It's somewhere in the middle at the point where it makes me okay with it. And I have relatively high standards for rigorousness of proofs. Okay, so, yes?
Somebody's asking if, so if we need to show that any physical quantity is symmetrical, we need to show that the blue star equation.
I got the question already, I answered that earlier.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Okay, so again, I'm going to leave this up for a bit, although you already have all these things written down, so it's not that important. And now I'm going to give an exercise. So this time I'm going to try both the activity in which we got to talk to each other. Well, I was here waiting, but you got to talk to each other. And I'm going to try something with exercises, because last time I got feedback that everyone seemed to like the nice eye co-activity, but someone said that the exercises were nice too. So I'm going to try both this time and we'll see how it goes. Okay, so we have 10 minutes left. I'm going to send you into rooms. I'm going to give an exercise to do. This is probably not going to be enough time to finish the exercise, but that's okay. First of all, there's a bunch of steps in the exercise. You'll need to do all of them. So let me start by getting the exercise. The real important steps in here are number one and number two. These are the steps that you should do. The other ones, you can do them in your own time if you're interested, but they're not important. What I want you to make sure that you know how to do is how to show that indeed something is asymmetric. And number three is also kind of important, but again, it's not as important. It's just an application of the theorem. So I'm giving you a Lagrangian, which is time dependent. I'm telling you what the transformations are. First of all, make sure that they are actually one parameter subgroups and they are not lying to you. Never trust me or anyone. Then show that indeed we have a symmetry. This is the weaker condition I was talking about. You don't have to show that S tilde is actually the same as S. Just show that the variation is zero, or when you take the derivative with respect to epsilon is zero. And I told you earlier, the formula was here. How do you show that delta S is zero? This is what delta S is. This is based exactly on the proof that we went through. So I just took the pieces from there because you've done that already. Delta S equals this thing. So if you take delta T, which you're going to have to calculate, delta Q, which you calculate, you know the Lagrangian, just plug in everything. Don't use the Euler Lagrange equation anywhere. And if this thing ends up being zero, then it's a symmetry and you're done. And of course, I'm giving you this exercise because it is a symmetry. So if it's not a symmetry, then something is wrong. Okay, so I'm going to set up you in the breakout rooms.